What do you make of these statements that have come out?
Well, it's also happened from Germany. So it's now Germany, France, and Britain have all come out in the past month and said, whoops. You know, they could have read Mark Stein 10 years ago and saw
right.
this coming, but they didn't. And they're saying some incredibly hard-hitting things, like their beliefs are fundamentally at odds with their belief systems of their host nations. They're beginning to wake up to the fact that not everybody in the world looks at power the same way. I'll take you back to the quote that says that the Arab worldview of power is about the strong horse and the weak horse. There's another ancient Arab prophecy that says this, or ancient Arab phrase that says this, a falling camel attracts many knives. Okay? Instead of deifying the little guy for being weak, they stab the little guy as he falls down. That's a fundamentally different core belief system. And you have to understand that, just listen to them in their own words. They actually say in their own words that they want to be powerful. They want to dominate. They want to grow.
Well, that's the whole idea of Islam. In fact,
yeah.
the Quran actually mandates that if indeed Muhammad was the prophet, and if indeed the Quran was the revealed word of God to Muhammad, then Islam must rule the world.
And
what about that? No. Don't we understand?
And even if we do understand that, what is it about us that would dismiss or apologize for or ignore the things that they would do if they actually came into power?
Yeah.
I mean, you brought us back to the gays and lesbians who protest against Israelis while championing the cause of those who would actually kill them if given the chance. And that shows you it just bypasses the rational mind completely. Why is it that some people would apologize for and defend those who would kill them if given half the chance? It has the power to bypass not just the rational mind, but people's instinct to survive. There was a great quote from Winston Churchill. He said, appeasement is feeding the crocodile, hoping he will eat you last. But this is even worse, because what people who practice under dogma don't get is that when you feed these crocodiles, it makes them want to eat you first. When you show weakness, and when you apologize, and when you excuse their bad behavior, it doesn't ingratiate you to them. It makes them want to eat you first, because you're demonstrating weakness. And so what I try to do is lift the veil on this belief system and show people
mm-hmm.
that this warped view of power that I call under dogma, not only are you not pleasing the people you're bowing down to, you're actually triggering their desire to come and take your power more quickly.
Well, I think you're right, and that's one of the reasons why I felt that it was important for us to talk about this, and you've done a great job of unveiling this, Michael. You indicate in chapter 15 of your book called The Antidote to Underdogma that America's at a pivotal point in its history. And I agree with that. We are at the moment of truth. We're in the valley of decision. So what do you see as the antidote to this particular mindless phenomenon called underdogma?
Well, there's the happy answer, and then there's the sad answer.
Okay.
The sad answer is this. The only way to satisfy those who hate America for being powerful is to stop being powerful. Right? Because America's tried everything else. Foreign
mm-hmm.
aid, liberated Europe, fund the United Nations. America's the most charitable nation in the world. Anytime there's an earthquake or tsunami or natural disaster, America's first on the scene with tanks and planes and helicopters. And by the way, unless you have power, you can't afford planes and helicopters.
Exactly.
Power is what allows America to turn its good moral heart and its good intentions into good deeds.
And it's why God promised Abraham that he was going to bless him to be a blessing, not to rule over people, but to be a blessing to the world. And I think the Hebrews have a phrase for that, tikkun olam.
Yep.
And the reality is that America has lived that out more than any other nation on the planet in history, and it would be a shame to lose that. So where do we go from here?
That's a sad answer. So the only way to satisfy those who hate America for being powerful is to stop being powerful. Or you take the people in America who still believe in American exceptionalism and American greatness and American power, and you rekindle that fire in them. And that's a big part of what this final chapter does. But there's another circle outside of us, people who feel that, you know, instinctive urge to maybe criticize America. Get the book or download the free chapter at under-dogma.com and convert two friends to realize that America being number one is actually good for the world, not just for America, but for the world, but for the people who vehemently and venomously hate America for being powerful. There's nothing you can actually do but to defeat them at the polls.
All right. I agree. Friends, your gift of $18 or more to Save America Ministries will put this $24 hardbound book in your hands, just released, Under Dogma, How America's Enemies Use Our Love for the Underdog to Trash American Power. It really has profound spiritual connection, I believe. We've tried to interweave some of that here in today's program, and I urge you to get a copy of the book. You can get it on our website, saveus.org, or call us, 1-800-SAVE-USA. And I want to urge you again to become a partner with us. Send your gifts by faith to Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia 23255. Remember, we're blessed to be a blessing. That's why power, and that's why wealth. Blessed to be a blessing.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you listen to. They happen to be my views, and for the next hour they're going to be the views of Thomas Woods, who's with the Ludwig von Mises Institute. He's written a couple of books we carry. One, Meltdown, the other is Rollback, and we're going to be talking about the current economic crash and what can be done to try to actually solve the problems we faced this evening. Thomas, thank you so very much for being with us.
Well, my pleasure as always, Dr. Stan.
Why don't you give us a little of the background, of course, of how we got into the mess we are and what needs to be done, because those are the two major issues facing America today.
Well, it kind of depends on which mess you mean. There are so many to choose from. I mean, the two I can think of are just the current stagnation in the economy, which is a mess, particularly, you know, when we've got 85% of college seniors saying that they're going to move back in with their parents after they graduate because they don't know what else to do. So we've got that, and we've got, you know, they keep telling us things are getting better, but there is so much uncertainty and people are so frightened out there that it's being greeted with skepticism. And then the second thing we're facing is something a little bit off into the future, but I dare say not the very distant future, and that is we've got a big crash coming fiscally. I mean, if we've got entitlement programs that are underfunded by well over $100 trillion, then it even seems like kind of a small problem to be worried about the other issue of the interest on the national debt, which with all these deficits being racked up, by 2020, we're going to be paying about $1 trillion a year just in interest payments on the national debt in the best scenario, in the scenario in which interest rates stay low and the government can borrow cheaply. So this is just, it's not like there are mean people in the world today who just want to take money away from people or take their benefits away or take, it's not that. It's that resources are finite and at some point, this thing crashes, and the sooner we prepare for it, the more gentle the landing can be for everybody, but the more we put it off, the worse it gets.
And, of course, is that what you're suggesting is going on up in Wisconsin, that they really have no alternative other than to cut back on the pensions? Nobody wants to take money away from people, but, of course, they're going to have to. What's going to happen to Social Security? There is no way that Social Security, as we know it, really can continue. Isn't it really a Ponzi scheme where, of course, they've run out of people to put in, to give enough money so they can continue expanding the base there, with certainly all the baby boomers are going to come to retire? What can we do about Social Security? Is there any way we can address what the problem we have? We've got 79 million baby boomers going to retire. Where's the money coming from them?
Yeah, and of course, now with your audience, Dr. Stan, I know they all know that the Social Security Trust Fund is a joke. Of course, there's no trust fund. I think I hear the "we're going to a break" music, so we better take this up on the other side.
All right, well, ordinarily I sort of it comes on a little bit early. It sneaks up on us, but basically, of course, I think it's vitally important. They keep talking about the Social Security Trust Fund. What is it? Well, it's a filing cabinet with some drawers, and in one of those drawers are a lot of government bonds. But the trouble is, the government doesn't have any money. I mean, it has to go out and borrow the money to pay off the bonds that it has. It's almost laughable. It would be laughable if it weren't so tragic. So many people, good people, work their whole life depending on Social Security, and there's nothing there. Well, you go right ahead.
In terms of Social Security?
Right. Let's talk about Social Security.
Well, what I found very interesting was about maybe 2-3 weeks ago, Peter Schiff, who has his own show now, had on one of the, I think, former actuaries from the Social Security system, and actually asked this guy, the guy who's a pillar of the system, he asked him, "Do you know what a Ponzi scheme is?" And the guy said, "Yes, I do." And Schiff said, "What's the difference between a Ponzi scheme and Social Security?" And I am not kidding you, Dr. Stan. The line went silent. And so Schiff had to, you know, as you know, you can't have dead air on radio. You've got to talk. You've got to fill that air. So Schiff immediately said, "Look, I'll give you the commercial break to give me an answer. Did you think it over?" Gave him the whole commercial break to think it over. He still had no answer. This is a guy who worked for Social Security.
But it is a Ponzi scheme. There is no difference. I mean, that is the tragedy. It's a Ponzi scheme. And finally, Mr. Madoff had to come forward and say, "It's a Ponzi scheme. We're out of money. We can't." As long as the economy kept expanding, it was fine. Well, when you had more money going out than coming in, why, of course, you had to admit it. And this is what's happened with Social Security. Only we've got all this money. It's not just those people, you know, that have paid, and we've got all these new baby boomers retiring.
Yeah.
It's a Ponzi scheme, and nobody wants to say that.
And I think this is why Schiff says that we might as well make Bernie Secretary of the Treasury. He'd feel right at home. It's just a fiasco, and it was they had a good run while it lasted. You know, for the past 40 or so years, I mean, people did pretty well with it, and skeptics seemed like they were just carping critics for no good reason. But now, unfortunately, the critics are being vindicated over and over and over again. I sure wouldn't want to be president in 2012 or 16. I mean, good heavens, the party's over.
Well, we have the same problem with Medicare.
Even worse.
What are we going to do as far as Medicare is concerned? There's no possible way, and because George Bush actually aggravated it with the Medicare drug bill, and they knew this whole thing was going to collapse.
Yeah, and the guy we're told is going to lead us out of this, Congressman Paul Ryan, he voted for that expansion of Medicare. He's the guy who's supposed to be the great budget cutter. You cannot make this stuff up. He's supposed to be our great savior. If there is anybody in Washington we can trust, we all know it's Ron Paul. He actually talks about what he actually does, and he's not some phony baloney guy who gives a pretty speech once every 2 years and then goes back to being one of the crooks.
Well, I think it's a great tragedy. It's going to be a great tragedy for the American people, but we have to face reality. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly Thomas Wood. Chris Thomas is a PhD. He writes prolifically on economic issues. But it's time the American people understand. Social Security is a Ponzi scheme. They're out of suckers, and certainly there's not enough money. And now with $79 million, give or take, 75 million baby boomers retiring, give a few over the next 19 years, why both Social Security and Medicare are bankrupt. And the people, certainly, who've been depending upon this are not going to get the benefits. And there's just no way that you can correct this sort of thing. I mean, basically, this year, we're talking about a deficit of $1.65 trillion. And basically, we've got the Republicans, or the conservative Republicans, arguing whether we're going to cut $38 billion or $100 billion from $1.65 trillion deficit. And, you know, what can it do? I mean, 40 to 43 cents out of every dollar the government currently spends, they have to borrow. How long are you going to be able to continue borrowing? And Thomas, at what point are other countries going to stop, you know, lending money to us? And when, of course, when the government starts to buy its own debt, that is marks the beginning of the end of our monetary system.
Well, because you're right. I mean, basically what we're facing is a bunch of really bad choices. Like, there is no big rock candy mountain where there's a big pile of cash sitting there somewhere that we can just grab. And yet, to this day, apparently there are still some Americans who think there is. I just saw a poll the other day that said two interesting things. One, most Americans think taxes will have to go up to get us out of this budget mess. And by that, of course, they mean somebody else's taxes, never their own. And secondly, they think Social Security and Medicare payments should be increased. Increased. So being in the hole $114 trillion is not enough for these people. It needs to be increased. What exactly would it take for people to realize the situation that we're in, or what we're going on, what's going on? And even with all the Tea Party energy out there, when you ask those people, what would you want to cut? You could very, very rarely pin them down on anything other than foreign aid, which might even barely be 1% of the budget. I mean, well, then what would you like to do? I mean, could we be adults about this for 5 seconds? Or do we have to, in effect, act like seven-year-olds the rest of our lives, thinking that no hard decisions have to be made? I mean, because you're right. We either tax ourselves to death to get us out of this, and in rollback I lay out exactly how much taxes would have to go up, and it's just unfathomable. We could borrow our way out, but as you say, lenders are going to be running for the doors over the next few years, running for the exits to get out of this. They're not going to be wanting to lend us more. And then finally, there's the inflationary Holocaust approach, if that's what you'd like to pursue. That's it. I mean, there is no, or I suppose there's a supply side approach. We could grow our way out of it. Yeah, we're going to grow our way out of a $114 trillion hole. I really don't see that happening.
Well, you know, the thing that bothers me as I look and see what's happening, I personally believe that the price of oil is going to continue going up. We have some access to some information that comes from people very close to the people who are sort of working behind the scenes, and they're talking about, you know, $200 barrel oil, which, of course, would be just disastrous or fragile economy. But, of course, the solution to that, going along with that, will be inflation. And with that inflation, why, that's one way of getting out from under the burden of all this debt, isn't it?
To some degree it is, because, of course, they can repay people who lent the money with the money that's worth less. But, of course, that's just another way of taking the money from the general public, because people are going to have to pay higher prices for everything. It's another way of taxing them. And one way or another, real resources are going to have to be transferred from A to B. And you can transfer them open and above board through taxes, or you can transfer them surreptitiously through inflation. But transferred they will be. And it's important for Americans to be educated enough and not duped by the system, so that they realize who's doing the looting, so they understand where the blame belongs.
Well, who is doing the looting, and where does the blame belong?
Well, when the inflation hits, which is already started, the price inflation, we can already see rumblings of that already. I mean, producer prices, business firms are noting that a lot of their inputs are going way up, and they're seeing this type of pressure, which is usually a prefaces of consumer price inflation. But they're going to be told, well, you know, it's price gougers, it's the oil companies, it's the labor unions, it's always everybody. It's everybody, you, it's me, it's the price gougers, it's somebody, but it's never the government. Like, they're always innocent of everything. It's always our fault. You know, when they set up price controls and that leads to shortages, that's not because of their price controls. That's because people are hoarding the goods. You notice they always have this story whereby they are merely innocent bystanders, and it's somebody in the private sector who's causing the problem. The only institution in society that can create price inflation across the board is the Federal Reserve System. There is no other way prices can increase all across the board. I mean, sure, oil could go up because it becomes scarce. That's one thing. But all prices, if it's just oil going up and we all have to spend more on oil, that means we have less money to spend on other things. So that puts downward pressure on other prices. But for all prices to go up all across the board, the only way that could happen is if more money is in the system to bid those prices up to these new levels. The only institution that can do that is the Fed. And the Fed, in this George Orwell world of ours, calls itself the inflation fighter. Well, I'd hate to see what would happen if they weren't fighting against inflation. Well, so the dollar has lost 96% of its value under these people.
Well, basically, of course, Mr. Bernanke, who's a brilliant individual, I mean, he says he's absolutely 100% sure that he's actually trying to create inflation because we don't have enough inflation, but he's 100% sure he could actually, of course, turn the inflation off anytime he wants to, and of course, he's in the process of quantitative easing, and of course, this involves, at least in part, the expenditure of some $600 billion to buy up Treasury bonds. And, of course, this is then going to drive down the interest rates. And by driving down the interest rates, certainly on Treasury bills, is going to drive down the interest on homes and on loans and stimulate the economy. The only trouble is that since it began, the interest rates on the Treasury bills have gone up.
Yeah.
And the interest rates on T-bills, not only the interest rate on T-bills, but the interest rates then on homes and other things are going up. So how could this brilliant man, who is 100% sure he can stop inflation at any time, how could we really trust him when he told us, if I buy the T-bonds, the interest rates are certainly going to drop, and then the interest rates go up? Because basically, if they continue, why, with rising interest rates, he will destroy our economy. In other words, the economy will contract, business will not expand, it'll be more difficult to borrow money. Other countries are certainly not going to lend us money unless, of course, they get a higher rate of interest. And so it's exactly the opposite from what he told us. Or does he think that we are that gullible, we don't remember what he said?
Well, the beauty of YouTube is that everything you say as a public figure is there forever, out there in the ether, for somebody to be watching, which is a fantastic development on behalf of mankind. But yeah, with Bernanke, it sort of makes me think that the next best thing to having somebody who's right all the time is having somebody who's wrong all the time. Because if he's wrong all the time, then you also know what the correct opinion is. You just take the opposite.
Absolutely, and that is the tragedy. Ladies and gentlemen, what we're talking about is the destruction of the American economy. What we're just talking about is the destruction of what you and the listening audience have spent your whole life working to accumulate. And if you are in bonds, if you are in annuities, if you're in pension funds, if you have money in the bank, and we get into an inflationary cycle, and of course we're depending upon Ben Bernanke, who's wrong 100% of the time, what will happen? Well, certainly, if you're looking and seeing what's going on today, I judge the level of inflation by my clothing catalog. And I get Blair clothing. I'm 6'5". I have to get clothes out of a catalog. I can't buy them off the shelf. And over a two-month period, the cost of the underwear went up 25%. the cost of the shirts I use went up 25%. The cost of gasoline that the pump has gone up, pretty close to 15-20% already, and looks like it's going a great deal higher. We know the PPI, that is the Producer Price Index, is up 14%. That means 14% from now, that probably 6 months from now, those producer prices will become to us, and that will be an additional 14%. 14% is a disastrous rate of inflation, isn't it?
Well, sure. I mean, especially if you've been doing the responsible thing, which is saving for the future, well, you get penalized and punished under that system. Whereas before we had the Fed, what actually typically happened was prices gently declined year after year, which meant the value of your savings increased. And so savers were rewarded. And no surprise, when savers are rewarded, you get more savings. But instead, savers are punished. So what is the incentive? The incentive is for people to spend now. Blow all your money right now. Is that the type of incentive we want? Well, that's what we got.
And of course, for a capitalist system, why, of course, if capitalism is going to work, you've got to be able to, capitalists have got to be able to borrow money so they can invest the money, so they can produce products and sell them and make more money. That's how the system works, and they pay interest. They pay interest to you. And but of course, when we get into an spiral such as we're in, why the thing you want to do is get rid of your money. Don't put it in the bank because it's going to lose value. What my fear is, it's going to lose value at an ever-increasing rate, and I'm talking about the next year and a half to 2 years. I think we're on the brink of a major upward move in prices. We'll get the view of Dr. Thomas Wood in just a moment. Well, do you anticipate that we are going to see markedly higher prices in the coming months?
I don't see how it can be avoided, and you know, as you mentioned, we're all...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Well, many men begin having prostate symptoms when they get to be 60 years of age, so Radio Liberty is offering a great product. It's called Prostate Support. It's put together by one of the country's leading health food manufacturers. It contains ingredients which have been proven to work. I know health experts who take the product, and I use it as well, and I think it really is very effective. In addition, we have a product for women during that difficult time of life. It's called Menopause Support. And lastly, we have a product for people who have chronic difficulty with their immune system and nothing else seems to work. It's called Immune Support. All are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. These products are compiled by a very reliable company. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
In these times of falling values, high unemployment, loss of income, and with hyperinflation on its way, we have created a one-ounce silver coin with a cross and the words of John 3:16 on one side and the American Eagle on the other. These coins are mural finished, 0.999 silver. Each of these beautiful coins will always have an earthly store of value, plus the cross with John 3:16 as an eternal value. Go to www.john316coin.com and call 1-877-316-COIN while supplies last. Order these beautiful 1-ounce John 3:16 American Eagle coins today by going to john316coin.com and calling 1-877-316-COIN.
By a group of central bankers at a secret meeting, and this thing has been kept more or less secret ever since then. But certainly the Federal Reserve System represents the banks and their best interests, not our best interests, because if it were representing our best interests, we would not be in the mess we are today. And for those of you who think that that's an exaggeration, I would simply point out that Rahm Emanuel, the former chief of staff of President Obama, has gone off to be mayor of Chicago to replace a man named Daley. But of course, his position at as chief of staff of the Obama administration has been taken by a man named Daley. In fact, it's the brother of the man that he is replacing as mayor of Chicago. And of course, where did William Daley come from? Well, he came from J.P. Morgan Chase Bank. And Larry Summers is resigning, chairman of the Council of Economic Advisors. He is coming from Goldman Sachs, and he's going to be the chief advisor of the President of the United States. That sounds pretty much like incest to me.
Well, you know, Dr. Stan, if you say things like this, you may cause some people to wonder if, you know, people may actually start thinking, geez, maybe this isn't a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. I mean, people might have heretical thoughts if we utter facts like this, but it's precisely these heretical thoughts that we need. This is the type of heresy that's good for society, is for people to question the version of history that they get. And, you know, the analogy I like to give is, let's suppose kids were not being educated by government schools, but they were being educated in Walmart schools. So every morning the kids go into the school, and they sit down in their classroom, and up on the wall they see all the CEOs of Walmart. And once a year, they have a special day where they honor the Walmart CEOs for their great contributions to mankind. And my goodness, wherever would we be without these great benefactors? Now, wouldn't we be a little skeptical of this? We'd find this kind of creepy, and we'd think, well, this is just propaganda. Surely we can't buy all this stuff. But yet, when it's U.S. presidents on the walls, and the kids are supposed to salute them and have President's Day every year and honor them, that seems perfectly normal to us. Because for some reason, we still are buying into this idea that these are wonderful, self-sacrificing public servants who just have my interest and your interest at heart, and they're trying to fight the bad guys on behalf of the rest of the public. You know, I am sick and tired of this. And really, what I'm trying to do in this book, Rollback, which I'm telling people who are listening to this, I know you guys know a lot of this stuff. This book is going to blow your mind, because what I'm arguing is that pretty much everything we got in that classroom, whether it's the presidents who we couldn't live without, and oh my gosh, whatever would we have done without this president or that president, or wherever would we be if we didn't have this government program or that one? We'd have no science, we'd all be idiots, we'd all be getting our limbs blown off, working in a mine somewhere. All this sort of propaganda that we got from day one that Americans have been taught to internalize, these have been the chains by which we have fashioned our own slavery, that we have believed this propaganda instead of believing that as a free people, we could indeed have provided for all our needs without any of these parasites seizing all our wealth. That's more or less the thesis that I'm going for here.
Well, of course, we have had some, I believe, good presidents, people who were trying to warn the people that there were people of great wealth, like, for instance, Thomas Jefferson. He warned against the banking system. Andrew Jackson fought a war against the central
bank. I love Andrew Jackson. He is. Read it.
In fact, I have written a treatise called a philosophy of philosophic warning, I think it is. It's simply Andrew Jackson's farewell address with my remarks on it. But really, Andrew Jackson saw so clearly that the day would come when the banks would take control of the government. He said, if you ever allow this to happen, when I'm gone or certainly at some time in the future, but if you ever allow the banks to control your government, you will lose everything. I have a letter that FDR wrote to Colonel House in 1933. I found this in Colonel House's papers. Suddenly, President Roosevelt writes to Colonel House and says, as you and I both know, why certain financial elements in the major centers has owned our government since the days of Andrew Jackson. Now, he's writing in 33. Jackson came to power in 33, but that was 1833. Certain financial elements have owned the government since the days of Andrew Jackson. I'm not excluding WW, meaning Woodrow Wilson. Could that be what's going on today? Well, look at the mess we're in, ladies and gentlemen. And you're going to lose your Social Security benefits. You're going to lose your Medicare benefits. And if we don't get these things straightened out, we're going to lose our freedom as well. Let's at least try to preserve our freedom. We'll be back in a moment. Dr. Stan, our guest is Dr. Thomas Wood, and certainly, we each contribute a little to the understanding. I haven't contributed much, but that letter, I think, is one of the most important parts, one of those little dots you need to connect together to try to figure out what in the heaven's name is going on. And that letter, since I found it, 20, 30 years ago there, and Colonel House's papers, is gone. Everybody quotes that letter, but it really is real. I've got the copy that I got. Everybody's been copying it. But basically, what can be done at this point in history? Because basically, I think the inflationary spiral has started, and really, of course, there is no way that we're going to get out of this. With the structure of the societies we've had, we've lived in a wonderful make-believe world, but it's been a make-believe world. What are the suggestions that you make in rollback? What can be done to preserve at least our freedom, certainly not our affluence, because I don't think we will ever see the affluence we've had in the past during my lifetime. But of course, what can we do to preserve the freedom of my children and my grandchildren?
Well, first thing I want to start with, I hope does not sound like a cliche, because I mean it sincerely, but we can't make any progress at all unless we have a public that has some kind of clue about what's happening and that understands some of these issues and, whose eyes don't glaze over when you say the words Federal Reserve. They should glaze over with anger, not with boredom or confusion. A lot of the issues that we're facing, like, for example, with the Federal Reserve, these things are deliberately, I think, made to seem technical and complicated, so the average person feels almost helpless. Like, how could I even be entitled to an opinion on something so advanced and complicated? I think that's the way they want you to think. And that's part of the reason that I'm trying to do with rollback here, is take a lot of this stuff, out of the upper reaches of the atmosphere and bring it down to Earth and explain what's really happening. The average person, this is what's really going on. So step number one is that people have to know First of all, I have to understand the nature of the state.
Hold that thought.
Sure.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Dr. Thomas Wood, certainly one of our favorite guests. We've actually done interviews on with a number of his books, but certainly the ones we're talking about today will be his book, Meltdown, and his book, The Rollback. And certainly he is a fellow with the Ludwig von Mises Institute, basically a group of scholars that actually look at these issues and try to get the truth out. Now, we're being lied to by most of the financial programs you're going to hear. There are a few out there that will give you good information, but most of them are not. You're being lied to in our colleges. I mean, most of what I learned in University of California, graduated with all sorts of honors and those things, but most of what I learned just wasn't true. Most of what I have read in economic textbooks is not true. So, Dr. Wood says the first thing, before we can even begin to address what's going on, is to learn the truth.
Yeah.
People don't want to hear the truth. You don't want to hear that the world we've lived in is ended, and that we may very well lose most of what we have. But the worst thing would be to lose our freedom. And so basically, Dr. Wood's going to be talking, first of all, we've talked about the reasons why this whole mess we're in, that it comes under his Meltdown book, excellent. And now Rollback, what can we do? So first thing he says is we've got to have people who understand what is going on. So people don't like to hear painful truths. Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you don't want to hear painful truths, turn your radio off.
Because no, that's right. Yeah, exactly.
But fortunately, I have a voice, and this is being heard on, I think, about 10, 12 radio stations across America. At least our listeners hear the truth. They can listen to our programs 5 hours a day on three different networks, and the weekend program that goes to 33 stations. But basically, you just pick up the story from here, and I'll be quiet.
Oh, well, sure. But pretty much what I'm doing is, particularly with Rollback, which I think is my most blow-your-mind kind of book, is I'm trying to gradually, step by step, dipping your first toe into the water, trying to lead people into, you know, just one layer after another into this is the truth, and here's another truth, and here's a deeper truth, and then just on and on. So I start off sort of harmlessly enough, you know, with Obama has been a bad president. Like, that's where I grab the Tea Party people. Hey, yeah, all right, I agree with you. Obama's been terrible. Okay, now I got them hooked. Then I take them to the next step. All right, let's talk about the Federal Reserve. Like, I mean, you're against a centrally planned economy, supposedly, right? You don't like Obama. So how come you like Bernanke? So we talk about the Fed. And I take on all the arguments that you get from your supposedly sophisticated friends who tell you, oh, without the Fed, think of all the instability we'd have, and on and on. I go through all that. I give you all the ammunition you need to answer all that and to understand the real truth about the Fed. And then I talk about the military-industrial complex. Now that I got these Tea Party people in here, I'm not letting them go. You know, don't tell me that you care about the budget, but you're going to say the military-industrial complex is off the table. Give me a break. This is a ripoff, the likes of which you can hardly believe. And I go into the detail, the truth about how we have been fleeced by these institutions and exactly how they've done it and what specifically they've done. We'll go into that. And then the last chapter before I give some suggestions is called The Myth of Good Government. And there I take on the really hard cases. Well, where would we be if we didn't have government science funding? We'd probably out be doing rain dances or voodoo, right? We'd all be ignoramuses or something. I take that on. I take on the objection that, couldn't we just live like Sweden? Haven't they spent a lot of money on their welfare state, and they're doing pretty well? All these kind of objections that you tend to get, I address them all. And then finally I say, what are we going to do? And the answer is not vote for Newt Gingrich in 2012. I'll give you that preview. That is not the answer.
Well, let's just take on the military-industrial complex, though. But basically, you know, if we didn't have, you know, certainly a powerful military, how would we defend ourselves against all of our enemies? I mean, after all, we have to have, we got a quarter of a thousand, almost a quarter of a million people over there in Afghanistan, 90,000 soldiers, 110,000 contractors, 46,000 NATO troops, and they're fighting for our freedom over there. And Chris said, when Steve Croft on 60 Minutes mentioned to President Obama that they're, according to General James Jones, a former National Security Advisor, and Leon Panetta, the current director of the CIA, and you can check this out on the internet. Fortunately, the internet is a two-edged sword. I mean, it's a terrible enemy as far as privacy is concerned, but a tremendous source of information. You can check everything I say and Dr. Wood says. But according to General James Jones and certainly Leon Panetta, we have almost 246,000 people in Afghan. They're fighting between 50 and 100 members of Al Qaeda. What's wrong with this picture? So basically, of course, President Obama, you know, in response to the question from Steve Croft on 60 Minutes, and this was in December of 2009. President Obama, without even blinking, said, "My job is to defend America against terrorists, and they're plotting against us. That's why we have to have, I'm adding an additional 30,000 troops." And Steve Croft didn't even challenge that. Well, I guess he's gone as far as he could and keep his job. But so basically, we don't know really who we're defending against, because there is nobody else in the world who can challenge us. We spend more money on our military than all the rest of the world, or almost all the rest of the world put together, to defend ourselves against Osama bin Laden, who's hiding in a cave in somewhere in Pakistan. But you go ahead, Dr. Wood.
Oh, and I remember seeing that, I think it was Meet the Press, where Donald Rumsfeld was pointing out, had these diagrams of these huge cave structures that bin Laden had many of, and they had bedrooms and computer systems and heating ducts, and it was like a whole city underground. And they're like, gosh, this is incredible that he's done this. And so then they get out there and they start looking in these caves. There's no sign of any of this. I'm like, these diagrams we got on TV were just made up. There's no sign of any of these things. So, I mean, this was a sticking point for me. When I was, you know, 20 years ago when I was in college, I was very much a rah-rah, we got to get Saddam. You know, it's the same enemy then, you know, got to get Saddam. I went for the whole stupid package, and I can't believe I was suckered into it.
Oh, it is like the Vietnam War, you know. I used to think anybody who opposed the Vietnam War was a communist.
Was a communist, exactly.
And then about after 6 or 8 years of a no-win war, I suddenly came to the conclusion, the anti-war people are right. I mean, why are we fighting over there? And what are we fighting for? Why are we having our boys, sending them into a meat grinder? We're not even trying to win the war. And because now, of course, I'm one of the greatest opponents of the war, but at the time, I really believed that anybody who opposed the war had to be a communist. And I hate to think how naive I was, you know, at that time. And they're good people today. And I don't fault them, believe we're involved in a war on terrorism. But I hope one day they will maybe they'll be able to explain why we need 246,000 men and women, of course, to fight 50 to 100 members of Al-Qaeda. Go right ahead.
Well, of course, I agree, and I mean, I think the thing that hit me, one of the points that hit me, was I thought, well, gee, on everything else, I view the government as being totally untrustworthy, full of self-promoters who care only about their own welfare, who lie constantly, who are scoundrels in every conceivable way. Why do I make an exception for the most significant branch of the government, namely the Department of so-called Defense? I mean, why do I think those people are angels who would never lie to me, when they have every incentive to lie to me that any of the others would have? And suddenly, when you realize that you can't make this exception, you know, either you believe these people or you don't, and I don't believe them, and suddenly it becomes possible to see the world completely differently. And what I'm talking about in rollback is, yes, I'm talking about the foreign policy to some degree, but I'm also just talking about basic things like how do they... How do some of these weapon systems that turn out to be big flopperoos, or they're totally irrelevant or out of date, or the enemy they were designed for doesn't exist anymore, and yet the projects for them continue on for decades. They keep getting funded. They've become a giant federal jobs program. How does this happen? And the answer is these companies do it on purpose. They start off with something called front loading. They overpromise of what the thing can do, and they understate how much it's going to cost. Now, this thing is going to be great. It's stealthy. No one's going to be able to see it. They'll be able to bomb 10 countries at once, and it's going to cost like $10. Like, that's the kind of promise we get. Oh, great. We'll sign right on. But then they know the second stage is, once you get people working on this project in like 150 congressional districts, then you can never shut off that taxpayer spigot, because now there are 150 congressmen whose lives are on the line here, and you've got them. So now the program is locked in forever. They do this on purpose. They've been doing it for years. And so people who say they support the free market economy and they love the military-industrial complex, they must just not know what they're talking about, is all I can say. Because when you take a good look at this thing, it is an outrage compounded upon outrage. And to think that I defended this for years and years, like a stupid kid, you know, listening to Rush Limbaugh, and I defended this, now this is my penance, is writing rollback, you know, to say I'm sorry, America, for being such a dumb kid.
Well, I think it was Ronald Reagan who said, you know, the closest thing we have to eternal life in the world today is a government bureaucracy, and that's really so true. And I love to listen to Rush. I think he's the greatest entertainer in the world. But unfortunately, he's part of the establishment, and he does very well by telling us the Republicans who want to spend a lot of money are good, the Democrats who want to spend a lot of money are bad, and there's a real difference between what the Bush administration and what the Obama administration did. But the Bush administration was the biggest spender we had ever had until the Obama administration. I mean, I didn't think it would get any worse, but I was wrong. It did.
Yeah, that's what, unfortunately, they say there are only two things, you know, that you're certain of: death and taxes. But I think a third thing is that each president is going to be worse than the previous one. Like, it seems like that's the pattern.
Well, basically, what are we going to do? How are we going to roll this thing back? I mean, I wish we could take calls, but we really can't. There's so much in the book that you need to get. So what are we going to do? We are in the quicksand, and the more we wiggle, the deeper we sink. We're talking about, ladies and gentlemen, the destruction of the economy of our nation. We're to start talking about the destruction of the very foundation of our monetary system. And there's no better way to destroy a great nation than by destroying the monetary system. There are two people. One was Cloward and Pivot. And they were two economists writing back in 1966 in The Nation magazine. They were Marxists. They hate America. They wanted to destroy it. And they said, we can destroy it by just spending it on all of these programs, and we'll just spend ourselves into destruction. When the country's destroyed, then, of course, we can install the wonderful utopia. It's almost like, step by step, we're following Cloward and Pivot. Well, right ahead.
No, I think you're completely right about that. And what I'm doing in here at the end is, I don't want to give away the whole punchline, but basically, you know, I got a couple of policy proposals in here, but a lot of it is thinking outside the box. Like, the solution to these problems is not going to be found anywhere between Joe Biden and Mitt Romney. I think it's safe to say. So, you know, we have to be willing to think outside that box. We have to be willing to crush that box into the ground and then set it on fire if we're going to make any progress. So the sorts of things I'm recommending would be, we have to strip the Federal Reserve of as much power as possible, including through currency competition. We need state nullification of unconstitutional federal laws. I like this repeal amendment idea that would give the states, if two-thirds of the states say that a federal law is unconstitutional or they just don't like a federal law, then that automatically strikes it down. Well, maybe we'd have a chance of striking down some of this stuff. Jury nullification is very important. The Free State Project, the people in New Hampshire who are trying to move to New Hampshire to make New Hampshire at least carve out one state that's semi-livable, that's a good idea. Just withdrawing from the system as best you can. If you find some niche where you can get away with somehow operating outside of the system and you can starve it of resources, go ahead and do that. But basically, you know, the idea that we're going to elect Newt Gingrich, we're going to elect Mitt Romney, and anything's going to change, how many George W. Bushes do we have to live through before we stop being suckers? I mean, enough's enough. The joke is up. You know, quit it. You know, people are addicted to voting for, shysters. I don't know what else to say. You know, and the first step is to admit you have a problem. We got a big problem in this country when it comes to the addiction to